Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour, April 6, 2017. And tonight's main science topic, I'll be talking about electrical effects from Venus, from the Jupiter winds, and atmospheric electricity. A few other topics here, quite a few emails coming in from people this week. But to start with, an unbelievable story hit the press this week. Westinghouse declares bankruptcy. And just from understanding the inside story here, they're doing it. They're heading off at the pass losses that are going to come their way in a big way because of their investment in equipment and time in their company's basically investment into the infrastructure of nuclear power. And this past week, last week I was going to report on this, but I didn't quite have time. I had so much going on with the topic I dealt with last week, dealing with climate change, etc. But I was also going to talk about Fukushima. Turns out that General Electric owns Tokyo Electric. And so, therefore, they are the primary investor in the Fukushima power plant. Not only that, but they provided the nuclear reactors for that. Now they're being sued. And their response was, oh, they were victims of natural disasters. Well, no. Let me tell you what really happened at Fukushima. This is the inside scoop, and this is what actually happened. The cause of the tsunami was two nuclear bombs that went off in a trench off of northeast sector in the ocean of Japan. And they caused a number of rolling waves. This was not a massive, like this 80-foot wall of water that all of a sudden comes through. No, this was a series of waves, and you can actually see footage of this, that kind of rolled in and then rolled back out. On the northeast corner, it was a little bit more exaggerated, but the earthquake was not this massive 8-point earthquake. It was in the 5 range, and it was so insignificant that people did not leave work or go running out of buildings. They continued to work. In fact, nobody even knew the tsunami was coming because and typically you would associate a major earthquake with potential tsunami. I mean, these people live in Japan. They live with us every day. So the earthquake was really pretty small, and they just kept working. And the first they knew anything was going on was when the waves started to roll in. And you can see in the videos in northeastern Japan that the cars are all parked in the parking lot. Everything is neatly in order. So the tsunami, remember, came in quite a bit after the earthquake. So all the cars are parked in the parking lots. Everything is normal. And all of a sudden, the wave starts rolling in, moving cars and throwing cars around and etc. And in Fukushima, the people are standing up on the bridge of the reactor taking pictures of this, like movies. And so anyway, what happens is the reactor was blown up. It was blown up, and the reason was because through backdoor deals, this is during the Obama administration, they were selling nuclear fuel, processed fuel, that would then be, you would be able to make bombs out of it, and they were selling it to Iran. Now, remember that the Obama administration had a lot of backdoor deals, and this, of course, was during Hillary Clinton's realm, reign as Secretary of State in the Obama administration also. And remember, she was responsible for the Uranium One deal with the backdoor deals with the Clinton Foundation, on and on and on. So that's at the security company at the Fukushima power plant was Israeli. And they left. As soon as the place blew up, they left. But it was an absolute monumental environmental disaster. Well, now GE is claiming they were just, poor victims of a little bit of a, a natural disaster. Well, the natural disaster story doesn't wash. Pure fictitious lies. And remember that Obama did nothing, as with the BP oil spill. He did absolutely nothing. And in fact, he blocked companies from going in there to shut it down and clean it up. And there are international companies that are set up to do this, mainly in Northern Europe. The BP oil spill could have been capped, but that was a high-pressure oil tube that blew up in the BP oil spill because they were getting the oil from so deep in the ground. It's like, imagine a balloon. Everybody's familiar with a balloon. What do you have? A skin that is tightly sealed and no air can get in or out and is blown up and it's expanded. And all of a sudden you take a pin and you pop in there and all the air wants to come out of that site and it basically rips the balloon apart. And so the same thing, if you take and drill a hole down into the earth where there's much higher pressure, I mean, it wants to come out, is going to come out. And that was the problem with the BP oil spill. They could not cap it. But with Fukushima, they could have come in with neutron absorbers and started forcing them down into the pit that had formed during the explosion. And by the way, nuclear power plants don't explode. They don't explode like kaboom with the, they can melt down, they can have steam outlets, things like this, but they don't explode. Fukushima power plant was blown up. Okay, so anyway, the Mossad, Israel, was responsible for that. The largest ecological disaster in the history of the world. And it's ongoing today, and nobody did anything about covering it up. So GE comes along, they're being taken to court, and the first case, 62 plaintiffs of 137 won, really not much money. But the point was that this broke a precedent. This broke a precedence that had been established since World War II. Nobody got a dime. Nobody got a dime for the nuclear holocaust in Japan. Just tough luck, boys. And those were Christian communities in Japan that were blown up, not wartime targets, not military targets, civilian populations. Okay, well, that's a whole nother story. So 62 of 137 people win this case. It is the first time in history when plaintiffs have won any kind of case against the nuclear industry. Okay, then there's another case in which 1,400 plaintiffs scored a victory in the court in Japan against General Electric. Well, hey, Westinghouse smells the writing on the wall and goes bankrupt. Is it because they're doing badly? They claimed a $9 billion loss or something? That's normal. That's normal for big businesses. They always claim a loss. Do you think that the CEO didn't eat, didn't get a good enough steak supper? No. The people all make their money. It's the business that takes the loss. And that's all tax and accounting, etc. And so anyway, that has nothing to do with them going bankrupt. It's because of the potential losses, which are nearly infinite, if people are allowed to sue over damages from nuclear disasters. Now, let's come up to the United States. The United States, and I've said this repeatedly, has about 104 working power plants powered by nuclear power. And they're all leaking. It's a monumental disaster. The tubing in these go underground, and they don't have any way to even get at these. The design of these reactors is horrendously bad. And so they're leaking into the ground, into the groundwater system, etc. 104 of them. Biscayne Bay, there's other nuclear reactors around the country that are exceedingly bad. But they all the nuclear power plants, part of their slush fund that they've been contributing, was set up by the Atomic Energy Commission and the federal agencies, that they should put a certain amount of money aside with their income to decommission the plant. But that's assuming that the plant has a normal lifetime, everything's hunky-dory, and they shut down the plant at its designated lifetime and then decommission the plant. And, of course, the cost of decommissioning a plant in 1970, when some of these plants were built, was certainly a lot less than what it is today, 2017. And these plants are over their lifetime. They've been recommissioned where beyond their lifetime, they're burning high-octane, reactivated nuclear bomb fuel. That's what they're burning. These reactors were never designed to burn this grade of fuel. It would be like taking a Ford Escort and putting nitro racing fuel in it and driving up and down the road as fast as you can. What do you think is going to happen? That's what's going on with these nuclear reactors. Additionally, the fuel, when they get done using it, the fuel rods still have a lot of energy left in them. And so they have to be cooled. So that's why they're storing these around the nuclear power plants, because they have to cool them on an ongoing basis. And that's why at Fukushima, they had 600,000 spent fuel rods on the roof, if you can even imagine this, on the roof of the reactor that blew up. So all of those fuel rods, and from what I understand, some of those fuel rods are down in the molten sludge that's going China syndrome right now. And those will eventually all go into the atmosphere or into the ocean, killing off the Pacific Ocean, literally. And eventually that will get out and kill off the oceans of the planet as the ocean currents take this and move it around. It just takes a bit of time. Okay, so anyway, Westinghouse declares bankruptcy because they're getting out while the getting is good. They will reorganize, move off some of their divisions, and distance themselves from any liability relative to nuclear disasters or cleanup or decommissioning before any of that hits. They see the writing on the wall. And so, anyway, unfortunately, for example, Obama didn't do anything. He didn't do anything about anything. All he did was create more problems. He was like a George Bush, but on the Democrat side. He just created a lot of problems and didn't solve any. But Trump, in a sense, is his science advisors. I haven't heard anything publicly about nuclear power. I know he's trying to get coal back in, which Obama was getting rid of. But Westinghouse filing for bankruptcy is over the top. And they really shouldn't allow them to do that. They should not grant it. It's like a large corporation and mergers. They should control these and say, no, we're sorry, but you have to face the music and you have to be responsible for the disaster that you created. By the way, I just wanted to add that you can look at the Pacific Ocean fishing reports anywhere from southern Mexico up to up to Alaska. The West Coast fishing industry is dead. Everything they pull out of the water has got slime on it and gross, and the fish are deformed, or the other products, marine products that they are harvesting for sale. All of them are deformed, and most of it they have to just throw back. They are literally, and this is in all the news media for fishing, but it does not hit the mainstream media, which is totally controlled. This in from a listener, Idaho's. This is from an article on something called solar roadways. Now, I saw this from its inception, but a solar roadway is a series of solar panels made of very thick glass, and they put these together on a roadway and then you drive over them and allegedly get your electric power from your for driving your automobile from the road. And they say, well, with enough roadways in the United States, if you paved them with this product, then you could get so much electrical power. But the article is showing that the Idaho company, $4.3 million project to date, 6.5 years old, has developed enough energy to run one microwave oven. And this is something I've said all along, is that when you see projects like this being funded and developing, you're always going to see this result, because real projects don't get funded. It seems to be one of the main funding criteria is that if something is going to work, it won't get funded. If something's not going to work, they'll throw all the money in the world at it, all the press, all the hype, all the Wired magazine hype that you could generate would come out. Which is, Wired magazine is a totally controlled geek rag that, hate to say it, but it's totally controlled to take the geek population and feed them full of complete BS. And they're great at swallowing it hook, line, and sinker. So anyway, this project, 6.5 years, now it doesn't take into account the fact that roadways don't stay flat. It might be nice, you might get a nice smooth surface in the beginning, but as time goes on, the roadways break down, and they always show these beautifully, perfectly flat roadways. But in reality, how many roads have you seen that are, after 1 year, are flat and nice? And anyway, like I say, that's like the big steel tanks that they're hauling out into the North Sea, north of Ireland, to try and catch wave energy as a source of power. Well, here's the bottom line, and I say it in my book, The McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project. The one criteria for any alternative energy product or development is, will it make a significant dent? Will it contribute to a high percentage of the world energy supply? And if it doesn't, well, then don't even start. And if it doesn't at a reasonable cost, that's with infrastructure, not only putting it in and installing it and maintaining it, but the actual production of the product. And there again, solar panels, unfortunately, even though the price is coming down, the ecological damage that occurs in the production is out of this world. But none of these... The solar eventually will just go the way of the dinosaur, for the simple reason that the sun doesn't shine. And on a very sunny day in the tropics or in a high solar region like, say, Arizona, the average amount, number of hours per day that you can actually collect electricity is 4. The other 20 hours, you don't get any electricity. And the reason it's 4 is because the solar curve, even if it's a bright sunny day all day long from sun up to sundown, the sun is not looking directly at the device. And you can put a lot of expense into moving the mirrors or the solar panels to follow the sun, but the end result is that the average installation, whether it's home or business, etc., is not going to have that amenity. So the end result is solar will go the way of the dinosaur. The other thing is, since you only have 4 hours a day nominally or on average of solar light input, then you have to store enough energy to carry you through those other 20 hours. So in those 4 hours that you're collecting energy, you have to collect what? That's 4 hours out of 24. That's 6 times the amount of energy plus the 1 hour that you're using. So that's 6 times the amount of energy that you're using during a given hour. Then you have to store it. So the storage and the price of storing energy is coming down, granted, but still it's horrendous. And that's why wind energy is the final solution. However, the 3-blade wind generators don't work. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that tonight. I just want to mention that the projects that get big funding simply, traditionally, don't work. this story in from a listener that the Navy is working on what they call a brain zapper. This is for Navy SEALs and for military in their highest special forces troops. Anyway, I'll just read a line out of this. It says, five different Navy SEAL units are testing. Okay, here's the name they give it. I always love these military names. Transcranial electrical stimulation. Now, would you want your son or daughter with transcranial electrical stimulation being done to them in the military? Wow. Anyway, it says with one command spokesperson saying the early results show promising signs. We are encouraged to continue and are moving forward with our studies. The devices manufacturer says the number of devices being tested is in the double digits. And he believes that neuropriming could improve shooting performance. So anyway, wow. So my comment was my response to the listener. I said, watch as their brain on electrical steroids backlashes and these dudes become babbling idiots later in life or sooner. Yeah, excuse me, but that's just over the top. To improve somebody's performance, and I know they do this already with brain waves in the Rocky Wars. They gave the soldiers drugs to get them all psyched up and in a fever pitch mode to go into war, like a kill mode. And they played music in the tanks as they rolled into Iraq. And these guys were just, you know, crazy, like kill crazy. There's something about that. There, you know, maybe we should just go back and say the rules of war are a stick in your hand. That's it. You meet on the field. The leader goes out there, and he's the first guy to get his brains bashed in, you know, and then all the soldiers that are want to follow can go along. But as warfare becomes more technical, as these so-called improvements occur, is it really warfare anymore? Or just a way for one country to dominate, and once they do, as with the United States, spearheading economic policy in foreign countries at the point of a transcranial electric stimulator. There's another article in from a listener, a 3,000-year-old, I always love where they get the dating from, but 3,000-year-old encampment, you might call it, in the United Kingdom, and this was reported on CNN, indicating that they had a high level of development of crafts, of weaving, of the other typical things you find, potsherds, etc. But they say this is a very rich place, what implies that it was a functioning city when it was overcome 3,000 years ago. But as with any of these digs, they don't really try and understand if these could have gone under during a natural catastrophe, like a Planet X object coming by or something like that. I've always said, and when you see these digs going on, they take the dirt and they throw it away. They take it out in some place and dump it. To me, you know, it's wonderful to find bones or potsherds or fabric or textiles or, you know, implements that people were using. But the dirt holds the history to the site and all the dirt on top. So that tells you what was going on when this place got shut down and what was the reason. Now, the next story ran on CNN for 2 weeks, and that's why I'm covering it. You may have seen this in the news. This is a architecture firm from, I believe, New York. Anyway, they have proposed a building that will hang from an asteroid. I looked at this and I thought, man, this is bad drugs on steroids. I believe they're probably running this story to see if anybody even has a clue that it won't work. It's just ludicrous. And they say this building will hang from cables from an asteroid that NASA will bring in from outer space, bring in an asteroid, make it orbit Earth, and then they will put cables around this and then hang this building above New York City. And so they show the building hanging down there with the skyline of New York, you know, Manhattan Island standing there looking up, and this building hanging down. But the only problem is the building that hangs from the asteroid will be moving at 300 miles an hour. Now, let me explain a little physics here. First of all, it's going to discharge the vertical electric field. And so all of the energy that's stored in the ionosphere is going to come down, and it's going to cause a tremendous storm wherever this thing is. That's if they even got it built. Now, second of all, the biggest problem is that this thing is supposed to be moving around. They say it'll be New York at one time of day and over Dubai at another time of the day. So people might even commute on this building. They'll jump on the building in New York, and in the afternoon they'll be over in Dubai. And maybe the next day they'll take a trip and get on the and go back to New York. But let me see now. The building dragging through the air at 300 miles an hour, don't you think that that's going to cause some energy loss? That would make the asteroid come tumbling down out of orbit. So this project does not work. Secondly, if you have something in orbit around a planet, for example, like, say, Earth, the orbits are as follows. The farther out in orbit away from the Earth you go, the orbits move slower. They move slower and slower and slower. So let's take an example of around the sun. Mercury moves around the sun very quickly, Venus in a couple hundred days, Earth in 365 days, and you get all the way out to Jupiter. It takes 10 years to get around the sun. Much longer, even though it's bigger. And so it takes a long time to get around the sun. And that's just the way the 1 over r squared force works, or Kepler's laws, however you want to look at it. The same is true with Earth orbit. If something is at a certain radius away from the Earth, it will move at a certain orbital velocity. But something in closer will move at another orbital velocity. So you don't just hang things, like hanging a picture on a wall. Doesn't work that way. The things in the lower orbit, as in the building, is going to want to move at a faster orbit because it's hanging. It's in orbit. It's not attached to the surface of the Earth. And so it's going to want to move faster because it's in a lower orbit. And so this will not work. So let me just take an example of let's just take a long tube in outer space. A long tube, and you try and make it stay in an orbit where the long tube is radially outwards from the center of the Earth. That's the position. The bottom of the tube, or the tube that's closer to the Earth, the lower part of the tube, is going to want to go faster in the orbit than the upper part. So it's going to make it spin until it's aligned in the radial in the direction of orbit. And so nothing about this building hanging from an asteroid will work. Plus, you're going to get electrical discharges now from outer space all the way down these cables, all the way down to the surface of the Earth. But for 10 reasons to Sunday, this will not work. Besides, you don't want people bringing asteroids in close to the Earth, because eventually, guess what? They're going to lose orbital energy, they're going to lose velocity, and they're going to come into the atmosphere, and there's no way to get them back out. Oh my goodness. I mean, when I read things like this, or NASA wants to put a balloon outside of Mars to cause an atmosphere to grow, they don't tell you why it would do this. They don't tell you how they're going to get these big balloons out there or where they're going to get the air to fill them with. I mean, these people are just smoking bad drugs. That's all I can tell you. Okay, just a couple quick political announcements from around the world. In Ecuador, Lenin Moreno wins the national election following Correa, the 12-year president who helped that country out, ridding it of the bankers, building up so they have, look at Ecuador. It's the number one place in the world. If you read any magazine or journal, Connest or whatever, the journals that talk about where to retire or where to live, I spent, of course, some time in Ecuador over the last year and a half. I talked about that, some of the studies I was doing there. It's a wonderful place. The food is wonderful. There's no GMO. They are energy independent. They have their own national petroleum industry where they export. They have more than enough for their own people. And they actually, at the borders, they have armed guards at the gas station, and they will not let people from foreign countries load up their gas tanks in an Ecuadorian gas station because they subsidize it because they basically are gas petroleum independent. They have electricity that is free. They have three big reservoirs up in the mountains that hydro dams, and they produce all the electricity that they need nationally. And it's basically they have their energy independent. They have very clean water there. They have good infrastructure. I mean, they have wonderful roads. You would think you were driving on a road in the middle of Kansas, or even better. The roads are actually better than a lot of the roads that are decaying in the United States. So Ecuador is a fabulous country, and they finally got a leader in there over the last 12 years that put them on the track of their food is wonderful. You buy three heads of lettuce for like 39 cents. And they're organic, non-GMO. They don't let GMO in the country. It's amazing. It's an amazing, and of course, it's a poor third world country, no doubt about it. But the people have a place to live, and they have good food. And in the tropics, that's what you need. And it's the highest rated country in the world to live in. If you look at any magazine, you say, where's the top number one place on the planet to live? It says Ecuador. Wow. That says a lot. And Moreno just won the election. He's the follower of Correa and will continue with those policies. And the opponent, the banker, lost. But, of course, the real election results, if you look at the local news, it was about 80-20, the split in the vote. And the actual announced winning margin was only by about 6 percentage points because of the CIA in their cheating and, you know, doing what they did in the United States. A horrendous, destructive landslide in Colombia. I'm sure all of you heard about this on the news. A small town in southern Colombia with flash flooding in the middle of the night just wiped it clean. Poor people there, there are places where you can contribute. There are bank accounts, go online to find out about those. You can send money and put it in these bank accounts to help these poor people because they just, you know, hundreds of people missing. Last I heard was 300 dead. Most of those people they may never find in the middle of the night. And in a country like that, a place like that, when the lights go out in the middle of the night during the rain, you can't see anything. It is dark. So here these poor people in the middle of the night just have this three rivers overflow their banks and come washing through the town. So if you can help those people out, find online where you can give to that. The town is called Mocoa, M-O-C-O-A, I believe it's spelled, in Colombia. Help those poor people out. Then just another note here, the Organization of American States, which is the banking, it's like the United Nations for the World Bank in South America. And they're trying to destroy Venezuela from the inside. Once again, the CIA is in there. Don't believe anything you read in the Western press about Venezuela. They're struggling for their existence. They're trying to run an internal economy when they're being dumped on by the World Bank. That's what's going on there. Okay, so anyway, on to a couple other topics quick. My water filter, I have not had time. I've been working on basically a new webpage. So by the time this show airs and is posted on the archive subpage, etc., you may find a new link to a new designed webpage for my webpage, and it's something that's coming in. I'll keep my old page for a while and then give a link to the new page. So there'll be a time transition here. I don't want to go directly into the new page because it's not fully tested yet, etc. But you're going to find some very interesting things here that are not on my current web page. It's modern. It has modern formatting. And also, it's going to be well, just go there and find out. Some very interesting things. And it took me a while to learn how to do all of this. But just go there and you're going to find some amazing information sources. Let's just put it that way. So the jmccsci.com. Hopefully that'll be up in the next day or so, but it's a lot of work and I have many projects going on in the background. My paid cast for this week, once again, dealing with the Cosmos series, the next in the series. The last two topics I covered in the end of March in the Cosmos series, one was on evolution and the other one was on the scientific basis for astrology. And remember, I used the Cosmos series of Carl Sagan, 1980, and the Cosmos series of Neil deGrasse Tyson, 2014 production, big television productions, to use those as talking points. And then I use those as a platform to talk about real science. And of course, those shows were meant as what I call scientific entertainment, to try and give you something that makes you think that everything about science is understood. You can just go home, watch TV, and drink beer, and don't think about it because Carl Sagan and deGrasse Tyson are so intelligent that they know everything. So don't even worry about it, and don't worry about the fact that your kids are being fed manure in the schools, etc. Okay, and just remember that the water filter sale is still on. That's coming down shortly. It's just that I've been busy and haven't had time. It's a number of things I have to do to get the sale coordinated with the shopping cart and all of that. So anyway, hopefully all that sales stuff will be taken down. But if you get there and the sale prices are still there, take advantage of that. I have the best water filter products on the planet. All-in-one filters, no add-ons necessary, no priming the filters so that you basically contaminate the filter before you use it. Okay, on to the main science topic. First of all, these three topics I'll be discussing all have to do with atmospheric electricity or space electricity. Venus, now let's go back to about last Thursday, and I'd been talking about this for some time. The Venus inferior conjunction was on the 25th of March, and so this happened. Over the weekend, I started feeling sick and basically dizzy, I guess is the best way I could describe it. I mean, really, really out of it, dizzy. And I didn't make much of it. I took about three naps during the day. I'd wake up groggy. And then I talked to some other people, and this guy said, yeah, I wasn't going to say anything, but I said, I'm sick. I'm ready to vomit. And so then I went out and I thought, I'm going to go out to some public places, like malls and, you know, airports and places like that. So I did. And I saw the people walking around, and everybody looked like they were walking through molasses, and little kids were just like, you know, and I talked to a few people and I go, yeah, I'm just, you know, I can't even move. I can't. But this is the effect of one of the effects of the Venus inferior conjunction. And this goes all the way back to the Chinese. And also, this is coupled with the viruses that come in from the Venus tail. The fact that Venus is discharging the solar capacitor, bringing in this material, and causing large molecules up to nucleotides of DNA and fairly complex pieces of DNA that form in the comet tail. And so, and this is known. I mean, this is when they went out to measure the tail material in Comet Vild 2, they found nucleotides of DNA and probably much larger pieces of DNA that they weren't able to identify, probably given the nature of the scientists that were looking at it, but they did discover the nucleotides, which are relatively basic, you know, basic organic molecules. So that was something that did happen. So the Venus effect is alive and well. And this went back to the 1200s when the Chinese first observed this. And it's also in the modern medical journals. It's documented in the modern medical journals. Coming up now, we have the Jupiter winds. And this is going to be very interesting because right now, if you look at the Earth wind patterns, if you look at the Earth weather patterns, Of course, we had a typhoon, some activity about a week ago, some other activity. But right now, the Earth is about as calm as it can get. It's like the calm before the storm. But that's good, because when the Jupiter winds hit, in about, they could happen, they could start any time now. All of a sudden, you're going to notice the trees kind of laying over on their side, and the wind's going to blow and blow and blow and blow. And you're going to go, holy cow, this, you know, it sometimes gets windy for an hour in the afternoon or something. But this is going to go on and on and on, and we could get some severe weather. But it's going to go on for probably a period of about 10 days till we lose that electrical connection with Jupiter. And back, it was about the early 1990s, late 1980s, the military actually measured the electron stream with satellites that was connecting Earth and Jupiter. And they really didn't know what caused it. But there again, my work goes back to the 1970s, and I knew what caused it. In fact, tonight I'll be talking about the third topic. I'll be dealing with atmospheric electricity and how this comes to us. And I got some wonderful pictures that just came in yesterday. Some listeners sent in some wonderful pictures of atmospheric electricity effects, and I'll be posting those on my webpage, the pictures of the day, etc., related to this. So, okay, where does this electricity come from? And I many times give lecture about space electricity and magnetism. So tonight I'm going to just take you through the entire laundry list of effects that occur to get down to where, and then I'll throw in the Jupiter winds and talk about how those are connected in, or the Venus effect, etc. And so anyway, here we go. The sun's surface, the atmosphere of the sun, that's where the fusion is. It's not down in the core of the sun like you maybe read about in a textbook or standard astronomy or astrophysics. The core of the sun is actually a cooler planetary core. The fusion of the sun is up in the atmosphere. Jupiter is the twin star. It's like Jupiter is a small brown dwarf. No question about it. Jupiter is a small brown dwarf. It's not visibly lighting up, but if you take a picture of Jupiter in the high infrared, which is almost visible, you will see it glowing very brightly, and I have posted some pictures. If you go down my pictures of the day list, you'll also see them there, of Jupiter glowing in the bands and in the great red spot, glowing in the infrared, and that's because there's fusion going on, low levels of fusion going on in Jupiter's atmosphere. It creates a proton wind, just like the sun has a proton wind. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because Jupiter has its own realm, so to speak. But now, getting back to the sun, since the solar atmosphere is rather delicate compared to the age of the solar system, it turns out that the sun has to have its hydrogen replenished on a constant basis. And this happens because the sun is discharging the galactic capacitor, and there's a constant influx of hydrogen into the sun. And you can actually see this occurring if you look. Basically, the sun is acting as a comet. And the return current sheet, we have these electrical interactions within the solar capacitor. Now, the sun is putting out an excess current of protons. They get out beyond the orbit of Pluto, and we don't know exactly where this ends. We can actually see these capacitors surrounding other stars. And it holds back a cloud of positively charged ions and dust particles, etc. And that's the material that's forming the so-called Kuiper Belt objects. It's basically a nebulous cloud, looks like a donut. So in my very early work, if you look at my papers in the appendix of the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, if you look at the appendix, I have the what we call the three-part comet paper, which was the result of my work after I was at Cornell in 1979-81. The that's in the appendix of my Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book. You will see I discuss there the solar nebula, the planetary nebula that surrounds the sun. So that's the capacitor. Now, the Earth, Jupiter, Venus, all of these objects discharge that capacitor. And what happens in an electrical discharge in the free plasma of outer space? Well, the electrons have the higher mobility, it's called in physics. They have the highest charge to mass ratio, meaning that they have a tremendous charge for the amount of mass that they have. So they, to make something move, something with a lower mass, you can make move with a much smaller force. And so the electrons move much more quickly, in fact, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of times faster than the positively charged particles, which would be protons. The electrons are 2,000 times the charge and the current carrying capacity in the discharge than protons. There are hundreds of thousands of times or millions of times more abundant in the discharge than the positive ions, and billions of times more abundant than dust particles that come in. And so when the electron beam comes out from the sun, because the sun is negatively charged relative to the capacitor, and by the way, all of this is neutral. If you get outside of this capacitor, it's electrically neutral relative to the sun. And so this is a closed system, so to speak. So Jupiter, Saturn, the moons of Jupiter, our own moon, are all discharging the solar capacitor. And so they all have an electron beam coming in from the sunward side. And that's why, for example, when I talk about the new moon and the new moon passing, the new moon is between us and the sun, so it's absorbing that electron beam and basically blocking it from coming in towards Earth. When the moon moves out of the way, those electron beam and the solar wind come pounding in, compress our magnetic field, and that's a trigger mechanism for storm activity on Earth. It's one of the trigger mechanisms. I call it the new moon passing. Okay, so anyway, how does this translate in weather down at the surface of the Earth? Okay, so we are also, we have to couple this in with the concept of magnetic fields. The magnetic fields are rings of electrical current. The protons go one way, the electrons go in orbits the other way. And so it all begins with a geomagnetic field that's locked into the Earth, but that supports the field that causes the solar wind to bend around Earth. Remember, I talked about this a few shows ago when I was talking about the Van Allen belts, that the high-energy particles can penetrate the protective geomagnetic field, the plasma magnetic field that's out about 30,000 miles out to the sunward side of Earth. And those can penetrate through. So they come in and they get into a magnetic orbit around Earth. That's what the Van Allen belts are. They're in basically a magnetic orbit. The Earth's magnetic field causes them to bend in a circle. And so they're literally charged particles, high energy charged particles in an orbit around Earth. And all of the planets have these, Jupiter, Saturn, all of them have similar radiation belts. Okay, so anyway, the discharge of the solar capacitor, part of this are these rings of charged particles moving around the Earth and around the Earth's upper atmosphere. So these concentrations of positively charged particles and negatively charged particles are circling the Earth, kind of like a good visual representation of this are the rings that are in the atmosphere of Jupiter. Jupiter has 11 rings. We have 5. There's one at the equator on Earth, and then there's 2 in the northern hemisphere and 2 in the southern hemisphere. The ring currents around the poles are what they call ring currents, and that's one of the magnetic coupling electrical currents. Then at the mid-latitudes, we have positively charged ring currents that move in the easterly direction, and that's because if you use the right-hand rule of electromagnetism, current moving in that direction gives you a coupling magnetic field that points in the same direction as the geomagnetic field that's locked in the iron and the nickel in Earth's surface. And then there's around the equator moving in the opposite direction, in the westerly direction. There's an electron beam, and that's what drives the hurricanes and the typhoons, etc., that go in a westerly direction around the equator. And once again, what makes those storms move westerly? Well, it's the right-hand rule of magnetism, because it's the electrical currents coming down from the ionosphere into the eye of the storm, or into the eye of the hurricane or typhoon, that if you use the right-hand rule, once again, of electricity, you take the magnetic field, you take the direction of the positive current, and your force finger points west. That's what drives these storms west. And of course, once they start spinning and start moving north, then they will spin up and then get caught up in the northerly moving jet stream, which takes them back east again. That's what happens. And this is all electrical. All electrical. It has nothing to do with solar light at all. It is all electrical. But guess what? Your meteorologist doesn't know this. The people at NASA don't know this. The people at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration don't know this. It's not in their computer models. They're trying to tell you that hurricanes are caused by warm water. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, I don't even want to go there. But so the end result is, now let's go back to Jupiter. When Jupiter is discharging the solar capacitor, now Jupiter is an orbit that's much farther out from the sun than Earth, but the electron beam that attaches to Jupiter on the sunward side is very extensive. It extends through Mars region, the region where Mars orbits the sun, and quite a distance towards Earth. And then Earth discharges the solar capacitor, and we have a tail on the anti-sunward side and an electron beam on the sunward side. And so when Jupiter and Earth start to move to where they're in a close alignment, visual alignment with the sun, these snaking plasma currents start connecting. And so instead of Jupiter having an electron current that's from maybe somewhere near the orbit of Mars out to Jupiter, now it's got an electron beam coming in that's from almost halfway between Earth and Venus. And Earth is caught up in the middle of that exchange. So we get blasted by this excessive electron current, and therefore that causes us to charge up. That causes the plasma discharge comet effect to occur many, many more times more active than normal. And if you listen to what I just said about the electrical currents coming down into the cloud systems driving the lower tropospheric weather systems, this is where the Jupiter winds come from. They are directly coupled to the magnetic field rings that are around the Van Allen belts, that are around the ionosphere, that are around the stratosphere, and then the what we typically call the jet streams, literally up about, oh, maybe 5 to 7 miles high off the surface of the Earth, is what the astronomers or the meteorologists typically call the jet stream. And you can look these up online and watch them move around all day. They're snaking around the planet. These jet streams then drive the lower system weather, which is what we call the winds. And so when we connect electrically to Jupiter, that is what is happening. So it's very predictable. And this happens about every 13 months. And there's already probably places seeing these effects. But like I said originally, it's good that the Earth is very calm, quiescent, quiet right now, because when the Jupiter winds hit, it'll be a very dramatic change to the current weather situation around the world. And typically, they're just winds. It's just wind. It's not necessarily associated with rain or tornadoes or hurricanes or typhoons, although you could have those. It's typically just wind. And so that's why I call them the Jupiter winds. And like I say, on my webpage, there are posted these wonderful pictures of atmospheric electricity above the clouds. Now, let me just talk about that for a minute. There are, discovered maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little more, there are electrical effects called ELFs and SPRITES, and basically atmospheric electricity above clouds, but standard science claims that this electricity is coming out of the clouds and shooting upwards, and that the lightning down below is coming out of the clouds and shooting downwards. Well, it's absolutely ludicrous, because if electricity is forming inside of a cloud, the most convenient, the shortest, the least resistive path of discharging that battery would be within the cloud, and you'd never see lightning coming out of a cloud. The reason you see lightning above the clouds, and I'll explain what to look for in these pictures, is because it's simply connected into this vertical electric field and electrical current that's coming in from the ionosphere. Now, when you look at these pictures, you go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, scroll down to where you see the pictures of the day. It's a little ways down in the center column. Take a look at the pictures, and what you're going to see, it looks like a river delta sticking up in the air. These electrical discharges come down into the cloud in kind of a spike, but as you look up, they fan out into the atmosphere. And that's because these basically rivers of electrical current are coming in from the ionosphere. And I have to laugh at when I see this reported. Now they're begrudgingly calling it ionospheric lightning. Now, as if the ionosphere was somehow creating this out of thin air. Let me tell you something. Electricity, like anything else in nature, doesn't just happen. It's caused, there are reasons for that, and you have to find the basic cause and effect. But if scientists actually get back to the root cause, then what they're going to find is that Jim McCanney's work is at the core of it. And where does this electricity come from? It just magically appears in the ionosphere? Well, that's what they seem to be implying. Anyway, take a look at these pictures. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Take a look at these wonderful pictures of the lightning above clouds. And you can always see lightning below clouds. But also remember the webpage. And if you're not a member of my paid cast, please go sign up. $3.95 a month. It's really a way to help me out, with lots of people joining. That's a great help. And then also the water filter is still on sale until I can get that changed, and all of the other information. And keep your eye out also for this new webpage, which is going to be absolutely stunning. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.